Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
This is the May 1 edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from Washington, D.C. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll check in on the weather forecast. John Davis of Risk Pulse will be here to assess the damage that may or may not have been done to the hard red winter wheat crop in Kansas. They had as much as 17 inches of snowfall over the weekend. We'll also take a look at where the most rain came across the Corn Belt. It's in the southern third of that belt. And then along the way, we'll discuss what's been happening in the marketplace with the market intel folks from AFBF. That's the American Farm Bureau Federation. I caught up with John Newton and Company right here in Washington, D.C., and we'll do that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way some of the numbers were trading at the noon hour at the CME Group in Chicago. Because I'm in Washington, these numbers are not the settlement prices. Corn was up about a dime, May contract at 368.5. And December at 393.75. Soybeans were up around 15 cents with the May at 961 and the November at 966. Bean oil up around 33 cents. The bean meal $4.20 higher. The soft red winter wheat up 20.25 cents in the May. July 21.75 higher at 454. The hard red from Chicago July contract up 27 cents. That's the biggest jump in Chicago for the day. And the May contract up 28 cents at 452.75. Live cattle futures at the noon hour again. June contract 124.22.5, 20 higher. August up 25 at $120.30. And feeder cattle in the May contract at $148.65, a 90 cents lower. August down 97.5 at $153.72.5. The lean hogs in the May contract at $66.25, down 72.5 cents. June at 77.5 cents lower, $73.22.5. The closing market report, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like at this hour for the Urbana-Champaign area. Tonight, cloudy skies. It'll be windy out there, turning partly cloudy again after midnight. A slight chance of rain. A low of 42 degrees on a wind out of the west-southwest at 20 to 30 miles an hour tomorrow. We'll go to a high of 61 degrees. It'll be windy. And tomorrow evening, clear skies, a low of 39. On Wednesday night, we'll have maybe a shower or two, nearly a tenth, or rather an inch of rainfall. That after a Wednesday rain of about 0.04 inches. We'll have a high on Wednesday of 59 degrees and a low of 44. And then on Thursday, we'll have a tapering off of that rainfall, though we may get another 0.5 inch during the day. It'll be overcast on Thursday. We'll go to 60 degrees and 44 on Thursday evening. Friday, partly to mostly cloudy skies. It'll be windy out there. A high of 62 degrees. Winds out of the north at 20 to 30 miles an hour. And Friday evening, clear skies, a low of 41. On Saturday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming cloudy with periods of rain later in the day. A high of 64. Saturday evening, a few clouds, a low of 40. Sunny skies on Sunday and 67. Sunday night, mostly clear and 44. Monday, a mainly sunny sky and 71 degrees clear on Monday night, and will drop to a low of 49 degrees. Tuesday, partly cloudy skies and 75. Tuesday night of next week, partly cloudy and 52 for the low. And Wednesday, partly cloudy and a high of 69. And I was trying to get to Wednesday evening because that's when the next set of rain comes in. A few showers then, a 60% chance of coverage, only around 0.2 inches are forecast at this time.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in Washington, D.C. this week with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I may or may not be with you tomorrow and Wednesday. We'll have to play that by ear, but today is kind of an important day in the marketplace because of the weekend weather, and we need to figure out what happened exactly. Kurt Kimmel is here with us. He's from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Kurt, kind of a rough weekend, especially if you were in the Western Plains State. The hard red winter wheat growing regions got cold and snow both.
Yeah, they late last week had temperatures dipped down to 28 degrees, and then over the weekend they were bombarded with a couple inches of rain and, you know, almost a foot of snow in some areas. Temperatures not going to cooperate anytime soon here, so ideas are that up to 20-25% of the wheat crops have been affected by this cold weather snap. Also, too, we got the wheat quality tour trying to go through and make some observations here this week, and they might have to have some boots and snow scoops to view the wheat crop. We'll see how their reports come out, but the trade is fairly concerned about the conditions here short term, especially if the commodity funds loaded up on the short side and seeing a little weather premium coming back in, not only in Kansas City, but spilling over into Chicago and the corn and bean market also, Todd.
So probably important to say at this time, at this juncture, we are recording early because they have some meetings here in D.C. that start in the afternoon while the program should be airing. So it's just about noon your time, central time, when we're recording. And futures are up 10 to 11 cents in the corn and 16 in the soybeans, up around 20 cents in the soft red, and nearly 30, 28 in the hard red winter wheat. Is this all driven just because of the weather forecast? 25%, though, is an exceedingly large amount of damage to occur in just one short period of time.
Yeah, how much damage we'll see, but 25% of it could be affected. You know, how much, we'll figure that out as we move along. It takes some time to see the results. On social media, they did bring some plants inside to see if they would hold together or not. And also, too, there's some areas, not only just the cold and the snow and the wet, some of the wheat was broken off also, but I don't know what stage from the extreme wind. But the traders' report showed big shorts from the commodity funds. In fact, if you take the major crops in agriculture, they've got a record short position when it's all totaled up. They are estimated to be short about 49,000 contracts of beans, 196,000 contracts of corn, and short 152,000 contracts of wheat. So it's kind of the perfect storm to happen in through here, as they've been pushing the short side, and all of a sudden we get a little positive fundamental news, and they are in a position maybe they'll have to scramble to cover some short positions here for a few days. As we move forward here, we're going to have to continue to feed the bull, and that will be on additional moisture coming across the Midwest, or also to see if we see some type of continued short covering from these commodity funds as they get more to a neutral position.
Are there places here now that you believe producers should take advantage of to either make old crop sales in corn or soybeans, though I doubt there's many soybeans left out there, or to make additional sales for the new crop?
Yes, that's a great observation, and that's kind of what we've been promoting here over the last couple of weeks, to put those courage calls in place so when we see opportunities arise like this, we can go ahead and pull the trigger on the up moves in here and feel comfortable about doing that without having the fear that I sold too early. But we're at the position now where corn's back up to the recent resistance levels, and I would say make sure you have your plan in place to make some additional sales above the marketplace. So if we punch through here and see some additional short covering, we can get some sales off. This is kind of the typical spring rallies we sometimes see. We'll be pricing some weather going in end of April 1st. Keep your marketing plan flexible so you feel comfortable about pulling the trigger on rallies.
Are there any other things that you've been watching this week or expect to watch this week that are important? Of course, this afternoon, the next crop progress report is due.
Yeah, actually, with the moisture around, numbers, our expectations are relatively high. Corn planting progress is expected to come in 32 to 34% complete as a nation versus 43% last year and 34% the average. Bean plantings are expected to be 9 to 10% as a nation. Of course, obviously, the most aggressive areas will be Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and portions of Ohio. The trade will watch northern Iowa, Minnesota, and Dakotas from here on out because they're the ones that are lagging. But then, too, they're the ones that are probably the coolest, but yet did not receive these big heavy rains. So from here on out, we'll kind of watch that north-northwest, see how they progress as we go in the middle of May here.
I should take one other look with you at the marketplace. Can you tell me your assessment of what's been happening in the livestock market, in particular for the feeders and fat cattle?
Oh, it continues to be a so-called rodeo. Overall, demand remains extremely strong. Cash trade in the 137 to 140 area. April feeders and fats went off last week. April fat cattle came up to the 140 area to equal where cash is. June continues to be a substantial discount at 123 to where the actual cash trade is taking place. Overall, weights continue to be on the light side. That over time and through here, the two will hopefully come together in orderly fashion.
Kurt, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Very good. You behave out there. Don't want to be seeing you on the evening news.
Just the president and myself. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm traveling this week, today, tomorrow, and on Wednesday in Washington, D.C. with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for their annual Washington Watch event. Check out our website for updated information from that event. And also, you'll find there we have posted a Twitter account that includes a list of folks that are out on the wheat quality tour. So if you want to stay up to speed on what the wheat conditions are like in parts of Oklahoma, Kansas, and Colorado, this is a good way to do it. You can always follow them on Twitter yourself if you look up the hashtag WheatTour17, or you can just simply go to willag.org and see all the folks that we're following there. Again, that's at willag.org. The Wheat Quality Tour will be there, and I'll be updating information from Washington Watch with news and interviews from here in Washington, D.C. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're in Washington, D.C. today. John Newton is here. He's with AFBF, along with a couple of other folks that are part of the market intelligence team, actually agricultural economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation. John, thanks for inviting me to the building. Tell me a little bit about market intelligence. This is a new initiative that is targeted to producers to do what? What is it?
Well, we've been putting out crop and livestock market updates for a number of years through our states for our members across the country to get that type of information. And we did that on a monthly basis. And we realized recently, just in this new age of the way people are getting information, that we wanted to deliver that information a little bit faster. And so Market Intel is a new effort to put out timely economic analysis of issues in agricultural markets. And we put it up on the Farm Bureau website at fb.org/marketintel, and we post content about 3 to 4 times a week.
And you post content that comes a lot from AFBF, but you might take some things, for instance, the weekly crop progress reports. We see those on your feed on Twitter. I usually try to make sure that those go on my feed at Commodity Week. What's your feed for that, by the way? And what do you come up with? Because these are some really cool maps that you put together.
Yeah, the Twitter for Market Intel is at FB Market Intel. And we put out like you said, I mean, when USDA comes out with new crop progress numbers, we may take some of that data and put it up on the website, because that's valuable information that we want to get to our members and stakeholders across the country as soon as that information is released. So, for example, today I'm very interested to see what the wheat conditions look like. We've heard a lot of rumors about a really poor wheat crop, especially out in the Oklahoma Panhandle, and what that's doing to the wheat market prices. So it'll be interesting to look at that, and we'll probably have something up on the Twitter page later today with that information.
So they'll be able to check that out. You can look at it again where?
At FB Market Intel. It's the Twitter handle, and the website's fb.org/marketintel.
And I'll try to repeat that into my own Twitter account, at Commodity Week, and I'll get that posted into the Twitter feed that's actually at willag.org right now. And if you're interested in what's happening out in wheat country this week, the wheat quality tour is happening. Started this morning, I saw 17 inches of snow in parts of Kansas, western Kansas, and the snow plows had been running. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to say. Drop by willag.org, and you can see a whole series of folks that are actually out on that tour, including the agricultural agronomist that takes care of wheat from Kansas State Extension. Caitlin McCulloch is with us, too. Tell me what you do here at AFBF.
So I focus on the livestock issues. On the Market Intel page, I try to provide up-to-date information regarding, you know, things like cattle on feed, hog capacity, all types of livestock market subjects of interest, and we try and post that about once a week, just to give farmers and producers an idea of what's coming down the pike in terms of supply and demand.
So let me ask you a quick question. As you look back over the last week, cattle and feed numbers came out not last Friday, but the previous one. They were fairly bearish, negative. However, that market did not recognize that very well. How quickly did you know what was happening in the market, and were you able to put that up on the market intelligence site?
Yep, so that's available on our website, fb.org/marketintel. We did a piece called In the Cattle Markets, which is a group newsletter that we write for about every 6 weeks, and we also posted it on our own webpage. Now, you're right, bearish cattle on feed was indicated, and on Monday we all were eagerly watching what the futures would do. However, marketing seemed to be quite current, and the number of cattle placed on feed seemed to imply that we're not going to have necessarily this glut of supply, although they were higher than what analysts expected. I think the continued aggressive marketings are going to keep those prices relatively stable.
And then by the end of the week, things changed a little bit because the president started tweeting about the North American Free Trade Agreement. Did you get that one figured out very quickly? I think one of our brokers suggested on Friday that what was happening at least Tuesday, Wednesday on was related to feeder cattle that would come across the border into the United States to be fed out. They'd be purchased from Mexico, and that there was some fear in the marketplace that there might be a shrinking supply if NAFTA were revoked.
The North American trade flows related to the cattle market are always interesting, and so when you throw politics in there, that can put a different spin on what you perceived as supply and demand at the time. Mexican feeder cattle are important to our market, and maintaining that supply and balancing supplies on hand versus what's coming in over the border are always going to be a factor. So how the president reacts or tweets or puts out news releases are anybody's guess, but continuing to watch those numbers and basing it off of what comes in on those USDA reports is where we try and stick to.
Also with us today is Veronica Nye. She's an agricultural economist, so she covers kind of a different area and some policies that are certainly related to agriculture, but on other issues. Tell me what you do.
Certainly. Well, you guys hit on NAFTA early on, and one of the issues areas that I follow closely is trade. So last week was certainly an exciting week for us, but I also cover issues like taxes, transportation, immigration, and labor, and biotechnology on an international front. So a wide variety of topics that everybody agrees on.
How last week, if we can go back to that, did you help coordinate, if anything, with AFBF, the corn growers, the pork producers, the wheat associations? I saw they all had the same line on NAFTA, which was, thank you, sir, but no thank you. We really would prefer NAFTA be left in place.
I think you've hit on something that's very clear, that the U.S. ag industry realizes that NAFTA on whole, not 100%, but on whole has been exceptionally good for U.S. agriculture. About 30% of all our exports out of the U.S. go to Canada and Mexico. So, you know, it's a big market, and it would be incredibly disruptive. We saw that in the cattle markets in real time, but it'd be incredibly disruptive. So, yes, there's a very strong ag community here of organizations that get together and have pretty real-time discussions when policy and politics mix. Yeah, you saw a pretty strong reaction of folks when that news story was leaked that potentially an executive order withdrawing the United States from NAFTA hit. There was a very strong reaction. And then within 12 hours, once the president had backed off that comment, there was another strong reaction of, thank you, sir. We also recognize that you know, this agreement's more than 20 years old, and all things can be modernized. So we look forward to looking for ways to improve the agreement. But thank you for recognizing the importance of that agreement and all trade agreements, frankly, to our industry.
Are you also able to put things up on the website, and how often do you pull that off?
So we started a couple of weeks ago a series on NAFTA, talking about the importance of the agreement in general. Then last week, after the announcement, you said, you know, what would it look like if the U.S. didn't receive the preferential tariffs of zero in Canada and Mexico, and did a little bit of a deep dive on what tariffs would be? So, for example, in Mexico, we have almost free access on tariffs. But if we were to pay what everybody else pays, poultry into Mexico faced last year a 100% tariff. Chilled beef faced a 20% tariff, as did almost all pork products. And lamb and goat meat faced a 10% tariff. So I use those as example just to show the variety of what tariffs are in those markets and what a world would look like if we didn't have a NAFTA agreement. So we did that last week, and now in the coming weeks we'll be doing commodity by commodity analysis of what NAFTA has meant, what it would look like if that agreement were not in place.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. That, of course, was Veronica Nye. She's joined here by Caitlin McCullough and John Newton, all agricultural economists at the American Farm Bureau Federation. Thanks for being with us, John. Especially thanks for inviting us over. We miss you there on the campus at the University of Illinois, some of the time that you spent with us. Again, where do folks go to find the information that you three are developing?
FB.org/marketintel is the website, and then the Twitter handle is FBMarketIntel.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. More from Washington, D.C. in a moment.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's May Day. The holiday has ancient origins dating back to pre-Christian Europe. But May Day may be best known for its tradition of dancing around the Maypole. By the way, the early American colony of Marymount, founded by Thomas Morton, outraged its Puritan neighbors by setting up a maypole and drinking and dancing around it for several days at a time. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Hilary Chardonnet was born, a French chemist and industrialist. Chardonnet was responsible for the development of rayon, which was first displayed at the Paris Exposition of 1891. The new material caused a sensation, and eventually he opened factories for manufacturing rayon out of mulberry leaves. In 1924, the first iodine table salt went on sale in the U.S. at groceries in Michigan. Diamond Crystal Salt and four other Michigan table salt companies agreed to add the trace of iodine to reduce incidences of goiter. Later in the year, Morton Salt supplied the national market with iodinated salt. And in 1991, Charles Elton died. Elton was an English biologist who in 1927 first developed the idea of a food chain. Elton described the way plants get energy from sunlight, plant-eating animals get their energy from eating plants, and meat-eating animals get their energy from eating other animals. Elton created the Bureau of Animal Population at Oxford, England, which was a mecca for ecologists from around the world. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. As a Small Business Administration preferred lender, Busey partners with businesses and entrepreneurs who bring vibrancy to the community. Busey, your dream, our promise.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in Washington, D.C., where it's warm, a little cloudy, and we expect some rainfall tonight. That all came into the Midwest, into the Western Corn Belt over the weekend. John Davis is here from Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. John, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about the rain that we had? Looks like it fell mostly in Missouri, but there was an awful lot of cold and snow in the western parts of Kansas.
Well, it was a very dynamic weekend, to say the least, and really almost an unprecedented event in some areas of the nation's midsection. So let's start out with the Plains Hard Red Winter Wheat Belt, which had everything from blizzard conditions in western Kansas to extremely strong winds to standing water to cold weather damage. And the bottom line is, when we add up all of those parameters over the last 4 days or so, you had a major damage event for the hard red winter wheat crop in Kansas and also in portions of Oklahoma and Texas, as well as some pockets of Nebraska and Colorado. So the bottom line, and that's the biggest issue over the weekend, was major damage to the hard red winter wheat crop across the plains. The Midwest situation is really just basically a heavy rain situation over the weekend, same storm system, but it's really the southern Midwest. It's not only Missouri, but southern Illinois got some heavy rainfall over the weekend, as did southern Indiana and southern Ohio. So it's about the southern one-third of the Midwest, as well as the northern Delta, that did have the heaviest rains, and those will be areas where some replanting will likely need to take place, mainly for corn, and also fieldwork delays will run 7 days plus with the kind of heavy amounts, which in many cases is 5+ inches, some areas as much as 10, over the last 4 to 4.5 days.
How much rainfall did you see in the northern parts of the Corn Belt, northern Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska?
Well, northern Illinois had pretty heavy amounts here, but that was an area that was kind of dissimilar to, let's say, Minnesota, in northern Iowa, in the eastern Dakotas. In those areas, that northwest portion of the Midwest, amounts were certainly on the light side. In most areas had anywhere from 0.5 inch to 1 inch to 1.5 inches, but that northwest portion of the Midwest did not get the heavy rains that we saw in the central and southern sections of the belt.
Coming back to the wheat areas, will they warm up? How quickly will the snow and the cold come out of those areas?
Yeah, well, the areas that got the heaviest snow centered on western Kansas, they will be up in the 50s over the next couple of days. So that snow will melt pretty rapidly over the next 2 or 3 days. And by the time we get to Thursday, basically all that snow will have melted across that area. They also will be warming up steadily as we go through this week. And by the time we get to the upcoming weekend and also into next week, they'll actually have above normal temperatures across that region.
Yet our hearts still go out to them. That's a tough thing to have happen to a crop.
Oh, absolutely. And that was, again, it's for this time of year, for the end of April, basically an unprecedented situation across that region.
That's John Davis of Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason reporting to you today from Washington, D.C.